Strategy and Insider, exploring future trends and their impacts.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Strategy and Insider podcast. Today, we're broadcasting this episode from our Eclipse building in Düsseldorf. And today, we're bringing clarity to one of healthcare's most challenging journeys, finding the right medical expertise when you need it most. How can you actually navigate as a patient complex medical decisions and identify the most qualified specialist for your specific condition? This is what we're going to explore. And I'm thrilled to be joined by a guest who has spent over a decade solving this problem with an innovative digital platform that empowers patients to make informed healthcare decisions. Please welcome Niels von Dellingshausen, CEO and co-founder of BetterDoc. Niels actually is an accomplished entrepreneur and business strategist who is transforming how patients in Germany and beyond navigate the healthcare landscape using data-driven solutions to drive optimal health outcomes. Back in 2012, he co-founded BetterDoc with his brother Christoph, the company's CFO, and his wife Donata, who is the chief medical officer at BetterDoc and a gynecologist. BetterDoc actually empowers patients by mapping their medical concerns to high-quality data on doctor and clinic specialties, presenting this information in a transparent, accessible way to patients. And prior to founding BetterDoc, Niels has spent a decade in the telecom industry, holding strategic and marketing roles at Croatian Telecom and Deutsche Telekom. That said, I'm really looking forward to learning more about his rather unconventional path into healthcare and his perspective on the future of health. So thanks really for joining me and a very warm welcome, Niels.
Thanks for having me.
So your career trajectory is quite particular. As you moved from telecom to venture capital and then into healthcare, where you founded your own company more than 10 years back, which to me seems quite a leap, to be honest. What actually inspired you to leave a successful career at Deutsche Telekom to become a startup entrepreneur in healthcare? And was there any specific moment in time that actually catalyzed this decision, or was it kind of opportunity-driven as such?
I think three things came together at the time. So first, I had reached a point in my career where meaning became more important than the next promotion or the next bonus.
Okay.
I started asking myself, what do I want to do with the rest of my working life? The second was, my wife is a medical doctor, and at the time we were living in Croatia and she couldn't practice there. So she started working with international telemedical platforms, and through her work, we suddenly understood the potential of digital health. And third, I come from an entrepreneurial family. So my father had already left a corporate career to build his own company. And so I had seen that taking that leap can actually work. But in the end, you know, the decisive thought was very simple. I didn't want to look back one day and feel that I hadn't even tried this venture. So that in the end was really the kick that made us do it, yeah, to have the feeling that we gave it a try.
And I was alluding to that, but it really feels like BetterDoc is a true family venture, which you co-founded with your brother and your wife. So how did this collaboration originate? And you alluded to that a bit, but what also have you learned about balancing family and business affairs when ramping up and then at some point running a fully fledged company?
So, well, how it originated is, we can tell you a little bit about what my wife did, what my brother did, what I did, and how this came together. So the whole idea behind BetterDoc came from my wife's experience working as a doctor in many different clinics, many different countries. And she basically saw that, you know, there was an issue with patients not being able to navigate themselves through the system, but basically getting lost in the system, you know, getting lost with lots of doctors, lots of different clinics, and not really getting to a result that was satisfying for them. And, you know, she's extremely driven by quality, but also by science. So she's got the right, so let's say, brain around this. And she really is the medical knowledge of the founders team and the brain behind how BetterDoc functions. And since she couldn't practice in Croatia, she was actually open for new adventures. Mm-hmm. So she was looking into that. My brother actually was the driving force behind founding a company. He had already made several business plans and attempts to get a founding team together. And he was a managing director of an internet agency at the time. And well, we'd always been sharing thoughts and, you know, it became more of an option to build a company together. So we developed the BetterDog concept, and that became the basis of our business plan. My brother's background was more on the tech and IT side, mm-hmm. Which was a good fit because neither my wife nor I had much experience there. And then my contribution to the team really came from the experience I had gathered around building business plans, financial business cases through my strategy consulting years in London and Boston, plus my understanding of how venture capital actually worked from my time at T-Mobile. So let's say it was a good sort of founder's team with complementary skills. And that was definitely one of the critical success factors. So I think, you know, to have a team that really, what we're doing, you really need somebody who has the medical expertise. Otherwise, mm-hmm. you have no chance of getting this off the ground. My wife, Donata, is certainly the key, the cornerstone of the company. And then my brother and myself, we somehow complemented this quite well. And of course, it's a special situation as a family setup. Actually, venture capital firms normally don't like this because mm-hmm. there is also a risk in it. Actually, I think there's more strength in it than risk because normally you don't think that there's a hidden agenda within your family. So mm-hmm. you don't spend energy and thoughts and time around, you know, whether anybody's, you know, following a different plan or anything like that. So I think that was a great strength of doing this together. Your question with regards to balancing family and business, mm-hmm. I would say that is an art, you know, that's not exactly easy. Especially when you're building and running a company with your wife and your brother. So that's very difficult. And I think one of the key topics here is, you know, to somehow find a natural distance between your work and your family life. And it's, to us, it was always a very blurry line, frankly, you know. So when you're at home, somehow you're still also at business because your wife as your business partner is also at the table. And if one of the two has a good idea, well, you want to discuss it. And it doesn't matter whether you're at dinner with your children or whether you're at lunch, you start discussing it. Yeah. And, you know, how I'm managing that are actually children, because they force you to get your head around something else, around them. But if you would ask our children, I think they would say that still, even today, after 14 years of BetterDog, we're talking a lot about our business at home. And it still remains a challenge to somehow stop that at some point. We have four children, and I think it's like our fifth child. You know, it's you can't stop thinking about it. So it has its advantages and disadvantages.
But I mean, work-life balance truly has a different meaning to you and your situation than to many others in the end. But it's good to hear how you seem to have found your way to deal with it. Otherwise, you wouldn't be in practice still after 14 years. And if I can just revert back on those 14 years a bit, because I'd love to also go back and understand what is kind of the riskiest bets that you've ever made around data, partnerships, any sort of regulatory decisions or considerations that really paid off, that you think this was exactly right to do this versus the exact opposite. If there would be the one thing that you can change back in history, the 14 years, what would it be and why?
There's many, and I will tell you maybe three.
Okay.
So business-wise, I would think that probably the most important decision that we took pretty early on was that we shifted from a B2C model to a B2B2C model, mm-hmm. meaning that actually insurance is paid for our service versus the patient paying for our service directly. We learned a lot by, you know, offering this as a B2C offering, but definitely this company would not be where it is today if we had followed that route. That might change in the future with AI and everything and mm-hmm. things being much more, let's say, scalable and less manual driven or human driven. But I would think, you know, for the road up until here, that was an extremely critical and important decision that we actually found a way to work together with health insurances that in the end paid for our service because it made sense also for them, not just for the patient. We won actually our first insurance partner by doing a pilot, actually the biggest insurance in the world sits in Munich. you know, we did a pilot with them and we just had 10-year anniversary with them and we were able to prove the cost impact, mm-hmm. but also the health outcome through that pilot. And that basically opened the door for us. And then we went on from there and, yeah, that changed basically the whole dynamics and the whole economics of what we were doing. And maybe another risky bet, and that's more, let's say, on the entrepreneurial side and shareholder side. So when we founded the company, we decided to work pretty much without venture capital. So we basically funded the company ourselves through our own money. Mm-hmm. And we did this for a long time. And even when we accepted investors, we only accepted sort of private investors on our terms so that we could make sure that we kept control of the company, number one. And number two, to also make sure that we... get enough time to find the right way to develop the company in a pretty complex, difficult, and regulated market. And mm-hmm. especially in healthcare, you know, there's very, very few startups that go through the roof within 2 to 3 years. You normally need a much longer time. Yep. And for this, it also means, you know, you need the runway to get there. And, you know, if you have, say, venture capital behind you, that can be a very good thing, but normally doesn't, you know, there's normally not a lot of patience behind sort of waiting for your company to develop, then this can become an issue. And so we decided on purpose not to do this. I mean, I was in a venture capital company myself and I knew what that meant. So I think for us, it was the right decision to go that way. So I think that was a very risky bet because it was our own money.
Yeah.
But in the end, it also allowed us to develop the company we wanted to develop it. And the one thing I would definitely do differently, and that would be, you know, in our founders team, it was a pretty good founders team, I would think, but still I would... If I would do it again, I would try and get a hardcore techie into the company on day one, which is something that, you know, we had to do a couple of rounds until we sort of got that part fixed in our company as well. And that can kill you. So you know, I think we always had a good product, good service, but, you know, to really scale it, you really need very good tech people. And so that was something that I would definitely change if I would found again.
But it's interesting that you also mentioned that the stamina that you need to have in founding something in the health space is totally different to founding something in the e-commerce or social media space. So you really need to convince a lot of the system stakeholders with your solution rather than only the end user.
Yeah? Absolutely. And for example, in our case, you really need to understand sort of what regulation allows you to do and what it doesn't allow you to do. And in order to get there, you need to read the Sozialgesetzbuch 5, which is not very... let's say sexy, but you need to do it because otherwise you don't know how to, you can't sell your service to public health insurances otherwise. Yep. And so there's a lot of complexity in this market that really doesn't allow three smart students to just launch a company and then be very successful within 3 years. You need to work your way into this market, convince the market, show them that you're in for real, and then they will work with you also for a long time. Definitely this market needs stamina. And if you're in adjacent markets, let's say you are in healthcare, but you are more, let's say, on the business side, like, for example, Dr. Lib, taking care of appointments for patients, but being more like a business model for doctors and clinics, this can go much faster. But that's really nothing that's regulated as such. You know. Yeah. But if you're in real health and you have to work with health insurances you want to get refunded by health insurances, it's a totally different topic. Then it gets very complicated.
And I think most of us might have already experienced kind of similar scenarios that are taken care of by your company, where a loved one or oneself is facing a serious health issue and needs really to find the right specialist rather quickly because there is a problem now here. You search the web for the right doctor, but the information as we see it and as we read it is really noisy, where you have marketing blurbs masquerade as expertise, where you have quality reports that are hard to interpret even for clinicians, and also numerous designations such as a medical center only add to the confusion, and what you get is a confused user, a patient. So could you probably elaborate how BetterDoc cuts through this noise and probably walk us through the methodology and explain how you identify specialists who are then truly qualified to take care of the very special needs of the individual patients.
Sure, that's the core of what we do.
Exactly.
So I'll try and explain it in relatively easy terms. So it's more or less three steps. Number one is you really need to understand, you know, the patient's medical situation, and not just sort of the pure medicine, but also his needs and wishes. It's extremely important, let's say, to get the input right, mm-hmm. because if you get the input wrong, then obviously everything that follows after that, including, you know, finding the right specialist, will be wrong as well. So you really need to understand the medical situation of the patient extremely well. And we're investing a lot of our resources and our time here to get that right. We have developed our own patient questionnaires that are specific to the medical indication of the patient, so that we get all the information necessary. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if the patient has hip arthrosis, he will get a questionnaire that is specific to that. And we need to know, you know, or get out of that questionnaire what the medical history is, what the diagnosis is, what kind of treatment has he already done, and which doctor or clinic has actually done that. We want to understand which therapy has been suggested to the patient as a next step, and also by which doctor. And we need to understand sort of his individual needs and wishes with regards to, for example, you know, gender of the doctor that he would like to be treated by, or what's his travel radius, his travel willingness. All these kind of things need to go into our analysis in mm-hmm. order to be able to find the right specialist. And then our medical research team that works on the cases basically uses this input to define the search criteria for the fitting specialist. So it's really, let's say, taking the information we're getting from the patient and then translating that into, let's say, medical terms, medical parameters that we can then use in a third step to match that against the right doctors and clinics. So there's, let's say, a little bit of the secret sauce in what's your issue into how does that translate into parameters that I can match to doctors and clinics. So that is a very difficult sort of part of what we do, and where most, you know, patients would not be able to make that translation.
And do you only get kind of layman information from the patient through the patient, or can you also retrieve data from previous doctor visits into having a better understanding of a patient's history?
Yeah. So we took a very conscious decision that we want to make sure that the patient feels that we rely on the information that he provides us with, mm-hmm. so that he understands that he's our point of contact rather than us being in touch with his doctors or something like mm-hmm. that, because we wanted to make sure that the patient really feels that we are on his side and we're taking care of him rather than taking care of doctors or the mm-hmm. system or anything like that. However, in the past or until now, 100% of the information came from the patient or comes from mm-hmm. the patient. I do think that going forward, we will see that a lot of the information will come, for example, from EPA, you know, electronic mm-hmm. Patient files, or other means that
or
will be available.
Rings, exactly. Or band and whatever.
Yeah. that's definitely a way going forward. And we have these discussions as well with insurances, you know, that also push into that direction. Mm. I do think that going forward, there will be information that we can probably access that is not, you know, where the patient doesn't have to give that to us again, mm-hmm. but it will be already available somewhere else. But in the end, you know, you have criteria that we specify, and that criteria then we match against our database of doctors and clinics. And I think what makes BetterDoc unique in a sense is that we're not working in a closed network of doctors and clinics, but we're actually doing matching against all sort of parameters and against all doctors and clinics that we had that are available in Germany. So mm-hmm. No limitations. And then we really try and find the best solution around the patient's mm-hmm. vicinity. So really, you know, getting a radius around where the patient lives and finding the best possible solution there, because you need to find ways to offer the patient something that he can really use, right?
I mean, it needs to be practical, right?
Exactly. It needs to be practical, needs to be accessible. I mean, there's no big sense, frankly, in doing a list of the 100 best doctors in Germany or something like that. You need to find the best possible doctors around the patient. And then maybe to just sort of give the full view, what patients really enjoy is that, you know, we don't just tell them, look, this would be a good specialist for you because, you know, he fulfills this and this mm-hmm. criteria, which matches exactly your needs. but also we then help him to get an appointment. So there's a whole service around it. We help him to get an appointment, and then we stick with the patient over the next 2 years. Mm-hmm. And we measure the health outcome development of the patient, also the success of what we did through patient-reported experience measurement and patient-reported outcome measurement, in order to measure as well what's the impact of us navigating that patient to a specific specialist. What has happened with that patient? You know, mm-hmm. how has his quality of life developed? And that helps us to then improve our database, our own database again. So you close the quality loop, but also it allows us to then report back to our insurance partners on, you know, what's been the impact of our work. So for example, how many surgeries have you avoided because they were not necessary? Yeah, and the patient has not had surgery, but still his quality of life has improved. And so this not only a benefit for the patient, but there's really also benefit for the system because you avoid unnecessary treatment that might have happened if, you know, the patient would have just gone somewhere.
And I find that super interesting how you do it, actually. And if I would, I don't know, call you today, BetterDoc, get a specialist mm-hmm. Match to my needs, you keep track on how this was going, right? So it's a cardiologist today, and mm-hmm. I'll call you back in, I don't know, 3 years and I have a different problem. Will you be able... So probably two questions. Will you be able to find me again, or do I need to let you know who I am and I need to kind of register and give you all the information, background information once again? Yeah, is question one. And question two is, with all that information that you would gather for me, and then also the aftermath, mm-hmm. kind of after the match make, and then you understand how I reacted to it and what the outcomes were, can you also predict, based on what you know about me, what probably my next best problem is or next worst problem is, and you can help me nudge in a way that it probably is not becoming a problem anymore. So hence prevention.
So yeah, very good questions. So the first question, it's a clear yes. So yeah, if you contact us again, you know, we will know that you're with us or have been with us before, and we can check sort of, you know, for which reason and can take that on again. Many patients actually use us for different sets of problems, so, mm-hmm. So over and over again, but different kind of cases, let's say. You know, our typical demography on patients is, let's say, more on the second half of your life. Mm-hmm. You know, it's 50 plus, because this is where you have most of your illnesses, and then normally not just one, so people use us for several different things. The second question you had, I find that very interesting, and it's certainly something we want to do going forward. Today, we don't do that yet, mm-hmm. But I definitely see that coming, because in the end, you know, what you're managing is a whole, let's say, patient pathway and a patient journey rather than just sort of one single event, right? Yeah. And we're discussing this with a couple of different health insurances that they work with us, for example, in Switzerland, where managed care is 20 years ahead of Germany, and where we are thinking about sort of indication-specific patient pathways to make sure that you first of all, you reach out to the patient early on and you manage him around along his pathway rather than just stepping in at a certain point in time mm-hmm. where it might already be too late, right? And it's these kind of things that where I see this whole market going, because we're spending way too much money for way too little impact. Yeah. This is something we can do much better and that insurances will push for, because in the end, they need to pay for it, and they will want to make changes to that process.
And I also noticed that BetterDoc periodically consults also with independent advisory board members of volunteer specialists, especially for rare and highly complex conditions, recognizing obviously the information challenges that patients face. So many doctors were among BetterDoc's early users, actually seeking support for colleagues or difficult cases. What does this reveal from your perspective about the information gap inside the medical profession itself, and how has this physician as a customer insight also shaped your service?
So I think, first of all, it's important to understand that we're using this expert panel that that you're referring to. We're using that for very edge cases at BetterDoc. Okay. So most of, let's say, I would say 99% of the cases that we're solving today, we're doing that through data analysis. But there is 1% of cases that you cannot solve because you don't have any publicly available data. There's no way you can run a data analysis around that. We have a famous case in our company. It's a 4-year-old boy with a tumor in his eye that that was so rare that you know, there were only a couple of cases for this kind of illness in Europe in, you know, over a couple of years' time, and you don't find data on that. So it's very difficult to sort of then pinpoint the right specialist to treat this kind of issue. But in the end, you know, it's extremely important for that one patient and for his parents, of course. So you want to be able to help. And so, you know, our DNA is that we want to help there. So that's why we founded this expert panel, because it allows you to, let's say, ask a group of highly specialized doctors in that specific field mm-hmm. where they would send their boy to or their child to. And these are then specialists that they publish papers on these kinds of things. They meet at congresses, they exchange thoughts. And that's then your best bet to get a quick hint at, you know, who would be a good specialist for this kind of a treatment. And we really use it, let's say, for these kind of edge cases, which are, of course, very emotional because very difficult to solve. Mm-hmm. And we're proud that we're able to do it. We have roughly 2,500 doctors there that support us without getting paid. It's something where they actually bring in their scientific knowledge and specialization. And what you were referring to is that in the beginning, when we started with BetterDoc, we actually, you know, we had lots of doctors using our service, let's say over proportionally high percentage of doctors using our service, which had to do with the insurance that we piloted with mm-hmm. in the beginning, because they're the largest doctor insurer in Germany. So we had lots of doctors using our service. And it was very interesting because you could see that, number one, they understood very well that they don't think that every colleague is equally good at everything, right? So mm-hmm. they understood that it makes a huge difference, you know, which colleague actually does the treatment. And then number two is it was also very difficult for them to find out which colleague was actually good at what, mm-hmm. right? If it's not within your own specialization as a doctor, it's difficult.
And it is.
And normally, you know, doctors are not trained to do that kind of data analysis. So they treat patients, but they don't do data analysis on which colleague is sort of specialized in what. And if you have 400,000 doctors in Germany, and you do, this can become a pretty tough exercise. So we basically learned or got proof that, you know, what we are providing to patients is obviously relevant, because also doctors see the issue of, you know, finding the right specialist for their own problem or their family's problem, and that they cannot solve it themselves. So that was, I think, a good proof point for what we were doing.
What I also find very unique and interesting is your transparency amongst physicians, actually, because your platform maintains that anonymized physician recommendations are actually visible to all the doctors in your network, which kind of creates a form of a peer review or even a quality control. From that, actually, how does this openness that you are bringing back to your physicians in the network affect the quality of the recommendations, kind of the caliber of information and share back of insights to your customers? But also, is there kind of a feeling of accountability for peers because they can see it and you're recommending something that they might even benefit from next time?
Yeah. So, you know, when we built this expert panel as part of as one source of the data that we use to match the right doctors to the patients, we spent a lot of thought on how we have to structure it in order to make sure that it doesn't become an advertising platform. Mm-hmm. Right. What we didn't want is doctors advertising themselves to patients saying, look, I'm great. No, you should see me. That's not what BetterDoc is. BetterDoc is not a advertising platform for doctors. We are a matching platform to make sure that the right patient sees the right specialist. And so we wanted to make sure that the doctors that luckily, you know, participate in this expert panel, you know, without getting any monetary mm. incentive, we still wanted to make sure that, you know, there's some sort of a social control mm-hmm. among them to avoid this sort of advertising character on our platform. And so we decided one way of doing that is by sharing all the recommendations that are given through one of these highly specialized doctors to the patient are then shared after the case has been worked on with the whole community, so that actually the other doctors can see who was recommended by for what reason and by who. And that somehow, if you think of that expert panel as the top 2,500 doctors in Germany that meet each other at congresses, mm-hmm. especially in their own field. It can be not a very nice feeling to then meet your colleagues at a congress and they ask you, well, you know, this case at BetterDoc where you recommended yourself for this treatment. You don't do much of this, do you? You know, I mean, this is basically the whole mm-hmm. idea of making sure that this doesn't happen. And I can say in 14 years of BetterDoc, we didn't have, I think, one single case where somebody tried to sort of recommend himself without actually any foundation. So anyhow, normally doctors do not recommend themselves, but they recommend another colleague. Mm-hmm. And they cannot recommend a colleague within the same clinic or the same practice. So it has to be somebody else. Mm-hmm. And then it's fully blinded. So you don't know who else is actually giving a recommendation. And the system takes everything together within 24 hours and makes a summary. And only then it's being shared. So let's say it's a fully blinded market research tool into specialists. So this, it works quite well.
So in Germany, if we stay in this market for a moment, primary care physicians, so the general practitioners, are actually also meant to serve as kind of a navigator within the GP-centered care model that translate to Hausarzt-zentrierte Versorgung, and feeling sorry for everybody not speaking German. But in a recent interview, you actually suggested that they are often also overwhelmed and cannot stay current across all the specialties, as you previously alluded to a bit. How do you see BetterDoc actually complementing the GP role rather than competing with it? Because there must be also fear in the system by GPs seeing BetterDoc.
Yes, and you know, funnily enough, we don't share that fear at all, because we actually, our goal is for a long time now is to work very closely with GPs, because you know, we actually feel that the GP has this navigating function or the function as a navigator within the healthcare system. And of course, it's impossible for a GP to keep, not only to keep up with all the information, who is good at what, you just don't have that information. Yep. So you need some kind of a tool that helps you to sort of recommend the right colleague, the right specialist. And funnily enough, there was a political discussion about it in the news, a couple of weeks or months ago, where actually the GPs were asked, well, you should now, you know, take over this role in this so-called Hausarzt-zentrierte Versorgung and do the navigation. And the clear answer was, yeah, of course, we would like to do that, but we certainly need tools to support us to make sure, you know, that we can fulfill this role. So, you know, for us as BetterDoc, one of the founding, I think, ideas was that we help as many people as possible with what we are offering. And the way to get there is to cooperate with GPs, because they see most of the patients. And looking at how, you know, the market is developing, I think there will be more patients seeing a GP going forward before they can actually see a specialist. Mm-hmm. So I really think it's, for us, it's of strategic importance that we get into this kind of cooperation with GPs. And for them, I think it's a huge chance to make sure that they can actually fulfill this role that they are given in within the system, to make sure that they give trusted recommendations, you know. So maybe to prove the point, you know, and give you a little bit of background, what we already did 4 years ago is we went into a cooperation with Medgate, which is our sister company in Switzerland. It's the largest telemedical GP in Switzerland. So they're like a GP, but only on the telemedical side. And so with them already, we have this cooperation where if a case cannot be treated end-to-end telemedically, and roughly 50% can be treated end-to-end telemedically, but the other 50%, they need to see a doctor in the field. Mm-hmm. And for those other 50%, we already sort of now have created, let's say, some sort of an integrated patient journey where we then take over the case as BetterDoc, and we make sure that he sees then the right specialist in the field, so that you have some sort of a real managed care model, right? Not just a gatekeeper, but a real managed care model where you're actually following helping the patient to get onto the right path. And this is really something I can see also in Germany. So I really think that if we want the GP to play his role fully or to its fullest and be the key navigator in the healthcare system, which I support, then I think he needs the tools to do that, and we can be part of that.
Your patients that are mostly in really big needs, right? So mm-hmm. they, in many cases, also hard to treat patients, where it really matters to also have an objective, sometimes even second medical opinion that is increasingly recognized also in healthcare policy. At the same time, many patients remain A, unaware of this right, or B, feel also uncomfortable actually exercising it, really questioning your doctor's recommendation, which brings also potentially an emotional barrier. From your experience, what cultural or systematic barriers prevent actually patients from seeking such a second opinion? And how can you, via BetterDoc, also help maneuver this a bit better?
So I think you're absolutely right. I think it's a couple of things that also I learned over the last 14 years, because I'm not I came as a novice completely into this market, right? Mm-hmm. I had nothing to do with healthcare. And so what I learned was that, first of all, people don't know whether they have a right for a second opinion or not, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's something that is written somewhere in the law, but the reality is nobody will tell you, right? If you're going to a doctor, I mean, the answer will not be, why don't you get a second opinion? So there's a lack of awareness. It's an issue. The second is, it's still a big hurdle for a patient to actually, let's say, confront a doctor and say, look, I think I'd like to get a second opinion on that. And for patients, this might seem, I don't know, disrespectful, distrustful, and a tough barrier. And I've sort of even experienced this myself when I was a patient, so really to confront a doctor and say, look, I'm not sure, this is right, I'd rather get a second opinion, it's a tough thing to say. And then, of course, in the end, it's also, again, medicine is very complex. So, as a patient, you are looking for safety. You're looking for somebody who will take that complexity off you, that somehow gives you, comforts you in a sense that you're in good hands. And it's very difficult for a patient on his own to make that decision that maybe there's somebody else that would be where he or she would be in better hands that at the doctor where he's now. And all of these things sort of do not help with a patient sort of navigating himself through the system. So what we're doing to somehow help with that is, number one, we're working with the health insurances to somehow communicate better to their policyholders to make sure that they understand that they have this right and that it is actually their health and that they should take the driver's seat. But also to explain to them that a good doctor will actually welcome a second opinion. Mm. And that there is no reason for a doctor that has quality and that is sort of convinced of his own quality would try and keep you away from a second opinion. I mean, that's also something we're trying to convey. And of course, BetterDoc is a good way for a patient to not have to confront the doctor. Right? Because in the end, he can just walk out of the practice and then he can contact us and we can then sort of look for a specialist, an alternative for a second opinion or for the treatment. And the key thing though in the end is it's useless, frankly, to get a second opinion from just anybody. Mm. You need to make sure that you're getting it from somebody who knows what he's talking about. And that's the key topic about for BetterDoc. You want to make sure that if you get a second opinion, it needs to be better than the first opinion, or at least you need to be sure that the second opinion is well-founded, because otherwise, frankly, it's worth nothing. And you can get 10 second opinions and still not know what to do. So you need to be sure that the choice you're making is actually a good choice. And that's really, I think, what we're able to transport and we're able to explain to the patient, what then in the end makes a difference to the patient to actually take that leap and make that step. And I can tell you, we've been asked many, many times, what the treating doctors think of our service, whether they're against our service or not, and whether we shouldn't share our information with the treating doctors. And our answer to that is always, well, in the end, it's the patient's decision whether he wants to share information with his treating doctor or not. It's not our decision. So really, we support completely this empowered patient that really takes his own decisions, and he can only do that if he has all the information necessary to take these kind of decisions. So this is really something that I think also drives how we're working and what we're providing to the patient. And only then, I think, in the end, he can actually navigate himself through that system.
And I can very much personally also relate to that, if I'm honest, because, I mean, in private life, I'm also approached by people saying, hey, you're a medic, you're working in the pharma and the healthcare industry, you're knowing that many pharma companies out there doing lots of clinical trials. Who is the next best cardiologist or oncologist or whatever? And to me, it feels really like knowing your personal boundaries, what you know and what you don't know, is super important.
Yeah, absolutely.
And appreciate really help from others that are true experts in the field.
Yeah. Yeah?
That is a characteristic to have as a doctor, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah? Mm-hmm.
Now, looking a bit at the patient complexity, it's not just about finding a hip specialist, but finding a hip specialist whose clinic is also equipped to care for patients with, let's say, dementia, or finding a physician that is close enough to home for somebody with limited mobility, wherever it comes from. So your questionnaire allows patients to specify these kind of contextual factors. How much do they actually contribute, those individual circumstances beyond the pure medical qualifications, to influence your recommendations? Meaning that how do you balance medical excellence versus practical accessibility for the individual?
Yeah, that's an extremely, extremely relevant and good question, because it shows a lot about, you know, the, let's say, the job that we actually have to do. And of course, I mean, medical criteria must be the leading criteria in choosing and finding the right doctor or clinic. For example, you know, if you know, talking about hip surgery, you know, you want to make sure that he's gets to a clinic where, you know, there's a lot of experience and specialization on that. And if he has pre-existing conditions that require a stroke unit, then you want to make sure that that's also available in that clinic and he's not in, in some other clinic that doesn't provide that. But also, we know from our experience that personal preferences are extremely important to achieve patient compliance, meaning the patient actually then visiting one of these recommended doctors. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't want to give a recommendation and in the end, you know, there is no impact. There is no, because the patient doesn't go there. So let me give you two examples. One is, we have a lot of female patients, for example, who for specific illnesses want to be treated by a female doctor. Mm-hmm. So if you have the option in your search to provide her with a female doctor, you know, then we know that this will sort of increase the compliance of that patient to actually follow our recommendation rather than just sort of recommending any other doctor. And travel willingness, for example, or travelability is also extremely important. You know, so of course, built into our service is that we make sure that people get to a doctor or a clinic that's as close to their home as possible. But many times, you know, patients will give us a travel radius that is too small. Sometimes they will give us a travel radius that's way too large. And we're actually able to somehow then consult them or advise them, you know, that either they have to travel a little bit further to get a better doctor or a better clinic, but that might be extremely important for their health outcomes. Let's say, for example, if something with, you know, there's maybe an oncological case, and but the patient says, you know, I only want to travel 5 kilometers to survive, you know, it might be very important that he maybe travels 50 kilometers. So we're able to somehow explain that to the patient so that he actually is able to understand sort of the trade-offs between those personal preferences and the medical needs. And this is also something I think that's extremely important in making the right choice for the patient, to make that choice sort of in a way that he understands the trade-offs between, you know, his personal needs and wishes and then the medical necessity. So one of the important parts of our service is to actually explain that to the patient, because in the end, you want to, you want him to take a an educated decision. You want to have a patient that really took a decision sort of based on his own understanding rather than just following any sort of advice. And so I think your question, you know, relates to that, and it's an extremely important part of getting those recommendations across to the patient. So without it, I think you will not achieve the right patient compliance.
And I want to not let you go without having spoken with you on the impact of AI on the field of healthcare, and also in particular where you're active in. And we discussed on our way here also around the happenings and the speed of technology and innovation that we're seeing in the Far East, so speaking about Asia and the alike. You've also recently noted like that ChatGPT and others aren't yet really reliable for recommendations that are medically oriented. And even in healthcare, this is, accuracy is of utmost importance, of course. Where do you draw personally the line between, let's say, an AI assistance from a ChatGPT or Claude to human medical judgment? And And as AI continues to certainly evolve, and this is speedy, how might your data-driven research model adapt and expand over time to keep track of that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's that is of course a super relevant question to us and to our business, of course, and we're dealing with this sort of very intensely at the moment. I can give you an answer of how we're dealing with it today, and mm-hmm. then maybe give a little bit of an outlook of where I might think this is going. So today we're using AI for information processing and pattern recognition. But if it's about medical judgment and accountability of what has been recommended, it must remain with experienced physicians in our business today. So we're already using sort of AI to make sure that processes that can be done through, let's say, artificial intelligence is, where we built it in. But then if you have the exact recommendation that goes out to the patient, it needs to be physician-driven. Medically driven, simply because we're sort of operating in a field where, as you said, a small mistake can make a huge difference, right? Yep. And you want to make sure that, well, if it would be about my children, I would want to make sure that this recommendation is right. And, I would say also ethically, it's important that AI is captured in a way so that that we as BetterDoc, can take the responsibility of recommending the right doctors and clinics and not just rely on AI doing mm-hmm. it. But going forward, we've discussed this with one of the, I think, leading professors in AI in the medical field. And the good news for us was that he told us that the one thing that protects BetterDoc with regards to sort of just simply asking ChatGPT or Claude, which specialist should I be seeing, is that in order to get the right kind of results, you need to train the AI on a specific sort of database. Mm-hmm. So the AI is only as good as the database and the data in that database is. Yeah. And if you want to make sure that it doesn't hallucinate or sort of produces some sort of results that that you don't know where they're coming from, you need to make sure that it sits, let's say, on a database that it has specific boundaries, right? That, mm-hmm. that the AI works on. So the database that BetterDoc works on is absolutely unique and proprietary. So it's very difficult to just sort of replace that or copy that because the data is not just simply available out there. You need to actually do not just hard research, but you need to get access to that data. And it's something that protects our service for the near future. But I also think that the AI will be an extremely important part going forward in actually also scaling our business based on the information that we have. So there's no doubt that in my mind that this will change sort of the processes within our business, but also make, and that I find a positive note to it, it will make our service more accessible for even more people. Yeah, and this is maybe where we come back to the beginning of our podcast, where you asked me what were critical decisions that we took at the beginning of the company. So I wouldn't be surprised if AI helps us to get back to the B2C mode mm-hmm. because it becomes an extremely scalable, low cost service with extremely high quality if you're able to somehow make sure that the quality is right based on the data that you feed that AI with. So that's something that I feel is a good note and something positive going forward, because really what's driving us is helping as many people as we can.
Hey, and hardly to find a better ending. So thanks for that positivity. Thanks for your expertise and the insights that you shared on transforming how patients navigate specialist care and medical decision making over the last, let's say, 40 or so minutes. So really thank you for that.
Thank you.
So that said, thanks again for taking the time, and also thanks everybody for joining us today. Please be sure to check out also our other episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music and the like. Until then, stay tuned for our next episode and take care and stay safe.
Strategy and Strategy made real.